Hello, Lore Party listeners. Welcome to a very special episode of Lore Party. You may have noticed something a little bit different. There's an extra digit at the end of this episode because we've officially crossed 100 episodes here at Lore Party. Yeah. Huge milestone for us.
Cheering.
And the voices you're hearing back there are all of, well, most of the Lore Party team. Some of the flaky ones didn't make it, so.
Hey.
Whoa.
Anybody not here is bad.
Shade.
Yeah, the ones that are not here, I'll be DMing privately. Perfect, oh dude. God. I'm loving the sound effects, Kevin.
Oh my God.
So you've already probably heard many of these voices that you're hearing now, but let's do a quick round of introductions for anyone who doesn't know who all of us are. I'm Abu.
I'm Neil.
I'm Connor.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Lawrence.
I'm Leo.
Nice. Well, we're all gathered here today for a pretty spectacular episode, I hope, guys. So what we did, here's the premise of today's episode. A little more casual than our normal episodes, definitely way less scripted. What we did is we made a giant list of 100 story-focused games that we here at Lore Party all recommend and love and think everyone should play. So we're going to try and go down through that list and cover as much of it as we can in the next hour. Let's jump into this first batch of games. So first up on the list, we have games 1 through 5. We got God of War. Oh, I also want to mention, these games are in no particular order. We didn't rank them by best to worst. We just made a giant 100 game list. So the first five here, we got God of War. That's God of War from 2018. Last of Us, Witcher 1, Witcher 2, and Witcher 3, which are all personally games that I would recommend highly. I love all of those.
Problem for me is I don't have a PlayStation, so I haven't played Last of Us or God of War, but I have watched them. And I do enjoy them.
Wow. You can still get a sense for their story and like the themes and the characters pretty well. It doesn't have the impact of the gameplay backing it up, but the story can still come across when you just watch it.
Yeah. You know, are we starting with God of War or can I just jump in?
Any of those first five.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I just finished playing The Last of Us for the second time. And actually Leo and I were working on a Last of Us episode. Amazing game. Absolute masterpiece in like every sense, like great storytelling, like just I don't know, nice hidden secrets. It's an emotional roller coaster. It's just fantastic.
I would say arguably Last of Us is one of the best games, just period. Like objectively it's one of the best games, and subjectively it's one of my favorite games of all time. The storytelling, like to Connor's point, like you were saying this, Connor, right? Like you can get an idea of the story just by watching.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I watched there's a movie version of Last of Us you can watch, which is like 6.5 hours long. And I was watching it in preparation for my episode with Lawrence, and it holds up. It's like really good TV, basically. Mm-hmm. It's just how good the story is. I don't even have to have my hands on a controller to enjoy the world and the characters and the voice acting and all of that.
Right, and that's kind of the Naughty Dog trait, right? Their games are so cinematic, they just play out like movies. Movies with great gameplay in between.
Yeah, that's so true.
On the Witcher point, I have to agree, these are really story-rich games that really deliver such a compelling narrative to the players. Like I think from 1 to 2 to 3, though, you've seen kind of an evolution in the Witcher gameplay.
Yeah.
Going back to play 1 feels
impossible.
Yeah, going back to 1, maybe even 2, it can be a little rough. They haven't aged that well. But the through line, though, consistently, they've always delivered a really strong character-driven story, and it's only gotten better with each installment.
I own all 3 Witchers, and I've only played about like maybe 4 hours into Witcher 1 because I kind of wanted to get the progression story through it, but everybody keeps telling me I can jump into Witcher 3 and not care about the other two.
And that's what I did.
I don't know. Can I do that, guys? Like,
I
think you absolutely can, yeah.
In fact, okay. I think you probably should, because I honestly think playing 2 or 3 first will make you want to go back and play 1, because you play 1 for the story and the world and the characters and to like go back and get the background. You don't really, like you guys are saying, play it for the gameplay, because the gameplay doesn't really hold up, and the graphics especially don't hold up. Like it's an age-old engine. It looks like ass. There's no arguing that. And like, you really have to play it just for the story, and you have to overlook some of the really bad gameplay elements of it, in my opinion. But the story just holds up so well. It's a Witcher story. But yeah, just jump into 3, too. Dude.
I'm just putting it out there. The books are really good, too.
I'm personally just waiting for the Netflix adaptation, and then if it's cool, I'll go back and play the games, because like, not only have I not read a Witcher book, I don't know jack shizzle about any of them.
I'm super stoked for the Netflix series. Brett, who's one of the hosts here on Lore Party, he and I have done a lot of Witcher episodes, and we're stoked. We're probably honestly on the show here. Brett and I are going to do like episode by episode breakdowns when the series finally drops in the fall. Very excited for that.
I will share that I was given The Witcher 3 and I had never played the first two. And I can tell, I mean, it definitely deserves to be on this list because the story is so rich and the characters and the plot and the world building is so profound and big. I actually couldn't play the game because I was so, like, I feel like I'm almost a completionist at times, and I wanted to know all of the backstories, and I wanted to know about the characters, and I didn't know anything. I was like, who's going where, and why, and am I supposed to know that yet? And my friend was like, calm down and just enjoy the game, and I couldn't. So I think it's an incredible game series, and I don't mean to say that I'm like, you know, poo-pooing on it, but ultimately, I had kind of a mixed experience jumping into 3 with no experience of the world. So maybe reading the books, or is there a video that you could watch that like summarizes what you need to know?
I can see how it would be overwhelming, but yeah, there are some primers on, I think I saw one on YouTube. It's like what you need to know about the Witcher world before you play Wild Hunt.
Yeah. I mean, it's 2019. There's gotta be.
No, I've seen them. They're out there.
Man, remember a time when games were not this complicated to play?
Well, when games weren't all based on Polish folklore novels, and that was the case. Yeah, but Witcher's a bit of a different case.
Well, Leo, question. You just said poo-poo about a game that's super violent and possibly fairly graphic.
Sure.
I mean, it's a great game regardless. The consensus here is that it's a great game, and that everyone should play it.
Are you shaming my vocabulary?
Broaden your horizons.
Did anybody? I don't think any of you played God of War 20 from 2018. I think just me and Bruce.
No, I did. I thought. Oh yeah, yeah. I thought this was just going to be general God of War. So
I was
just
really
going to be
anything on that list.
The new God of War reboot was one of the. It's definitely one of my favorite games of all time. It's for sure. I think to the point earlier about The Last of Us being just an objectively perfect game, I think God of War, you could make a case for that being a nearly objectively flawless game as well, in my opinion.
I agree. Graphics, music, writing, voice acting, the story.
The mechanics. Even just like the mechanics of the gameplay.
That was what blew me away about the early God of War games, is that even though I didn't necessarily care a lot about the world, the gameplay was fun. Like, they managed to make it really fun to like take out some big baddies, you know, like it was just a fun, crazy game.
Didn't you use someone's body as a doorstop in one of the God of War games?
Yeah, you slammed Helios's head in a, no, it was Perseus or no, Theseus actually. kill Theseus by slamming a door on his head over and over. Yeah.
I think a lot of different things happened with a lot of different body parts throughout the God of War series.
His head screwed off.
I think
a lot of poo-poo.
My favorite part about the God of War series was finding out that the reason why, you know, Kratos was always so damn ashy was because the ashes of his family were affixed to his skin.
They're literal ashes, yeah.
That's hilarious. Because I was always like, why the fuck is this guy so gray?
He doesn't just need lotion. He literally has ashes bonded to his body.
God. He might also need lotion. Probably.
Everyone does.
It's like, this new dude needs some gold bond to like rub on his elbows, but no, it's just his family. So
moisturizing is important, guys. Remember that.
Yeah. I don't know how well gold bond is going to work on the ashes of your dead daughter and wife, but that could be part of their marketing. Who knows?
A lot of olive oil.
Kratos tested and approved.
All right. So let's move on to the next batch of games. Let's do the next 5 here. So 3 of the 5 are just the Uncharted series. Uncharted 2, 3, and 4. Notably, Uncharted 1 is not on the list.
Should be.
And then followed by Bastion and Divinity Original Sin 2.
I will just go ahead and assume that Uncharted 1 can be lumped in with those four or those three.
All right, I want to hear your defense of Uncharted 1.
Yeah, sure.
You're going rogue, man.
I don't see how this is controversial. Because
I mean, in an age where Tomb Raider was bad, we had a game that was a good Tomb Raider. Like, Uncharted 1 ruled.
Uncharted 1 was a little less serious. Here's what I'll say. I think the transition from Uncharted 1 to Uncharted 2, you saw the story get a little bit more high stakes. It felt a little more serious, felt more impactful. But that doesn't take away from the fact that Uncharted 1 had still a solid character-driven adventure behind it. It wasn't just, you were just some dude climbing stuff and shooting guys in the face. You were like an actual guy with an actual life. And it was a bit of a B-style adventure movie to it, but it was still a fun romp. You know, there's a story to it. I guess it did get more serious and more character-driven later in the series, but I think Uncharted 1 deserves to be on the list as well.
Right. Yeah, I mean, full transparency, I'm the one that wrote the Uncharted games on here, and I'm the one that skipped one, primarily because I haven't played it. And then,
there you go.
That's a big reason. But also secondarily, I've never really wanted to play it because, I don't know, it critically, it wasn't a massive success, right? Like, many people didn't expect it to ever get a sequel or to ever take off, from what I understand. I might have the wrong impression, but from what I hear, the popular opinion is that Uncharted 2 improved Uncharted 1 in almost every way possible and like really solidified like Naughty Dog as a good developer, you know?
That's definitely the case. I think Uncharted 2 really put the series on the map, but Uncharted 1, yeah, was kind of a modest success, I guess you could call it. It didn't make waves, but it did well enough to get a sequel.
Right.
We should mention like Bastion being just an incredible game.
Oh my god.
Did someone hear that, Bastion?
That game is like, it's beautiful to look at. Just hands down, just beautiful to look at. But yeah, also, like, it's such an interesting story. Like, I still haven't beaten it, but it has all these weird elements of mystery and like not like it's very anime-esque where like you don't know a lot and then just you really get like lore dumps like on you all the time, like,
yeah,
you know, and it completely changes your view on the game you're like the world of the game you're playing, and you're like, ooh, okay, so that actually means that. And I think it's really good storytelling.
And you want to know, like, my favorite thing about the Bastion, like, you know, launching super giant games into like this like main stage, was the fact that like the gaming experience comes from the fact that they're doing all of this stuff in-house. So like the visuals, they have a painter on staff that does like the like scenery designs for their video games, and then they've got I can't remember what this guy's name is, but he's like their in-house musician, and he writes all the music for the games and stuff and like electronically composes it. So they like they're really like small ragtag like video game production company, but they do so well because of it.
Yeah, like, and one thing I think was really impressive about how the story was delivered in Bastion was because it was kind of so much was done with so little. It's almost like a minimalist, because like that much world building, that much background, and that much narrative is delivered with just one voiced narrator, and the rest is kind of like through visual clues and kind of body language. And there's an ending scene. I'm going to try not to spoil it, but there's like bad guys shooting at you and they stop. And just that simple detail is like delivered so visually well. And it says so much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just beautiful. Like it's all carried
exactly
off.
Exactly what scene you're talking about.
So well, so yeah.
Good. Yeah. That and one, I mean, shouts to the narrator too, you know, like the narrator carried the
story.
Such
a good voice.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like we have some voice actors in this, you know, discussion right now, and I'm sure you guys can vouch for like how incredible of a job this guy did.
He is my hero for sure.
All right, let's move on to our next batch of games. So next up we got Detroit Become Human, Gris, Life is Strange, Transistor.
You know, every batch of five Gris? I hear, I think I just hate video games. Man,
don't forget the fifth one, Oxenfree.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So to reiterate that, we got Detroit Become Human, Gris or Grease, whatever, Life is Strange, Transistor, Oxenfree.
I mean, I played a little bit of Grease. And it's actually like the music Oh my God, the music, it's beautiful. I have it on my phone on Spotify. And it tells an interesting story of, isn't it like depression?
Right. I think it's like a young woman's battle with anxiety and depression and sadness, how she like overcomes it. It's like a visualization of her emotions.
Yeah. And like, just like the color changes and the music as you progress through this world, it's really beautiful. Like, I haven't beat the game, but it is a very beautiful game, and I'd recommend it for anybody who like wants some light and easy, but also something that you can kind of immerse yourself in.
Yeah. It's been on my wish list forever, and it just, you know, I'm real cheap and it's just not hitting my barrier to pull the trigger. You know, it's like always 20% off and I need it to be 30.
You want me to slide you a 20?
Yeah, to be fair, it's a really cheap game comparatively. I think it's like $15 or $16.
It is cheap in, it's cheap in price, but premium in quality.
And hey, then we buy day one $60 Nintendo games. So we wait for anything that can have a sale to have a sale.
So, any thoughts on, we've already gushed about Supergiant Games. Any thoughts on Transistor?
Yes, freaking fantastic. It was great. I remember when it was announced at E3 because it was like right after I had played the Bastion again. And I remember them coming out to like Sony's E3 and announcing that this game was coming out. And I like flipped shit because it was great. They had like a really interesting trailer. The music was great. And then the premise for that game,
the music's so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I waited for that like soundtrack to be released. I like followed their musician on Twitter and everything. Like, it was just so good. But
I never got around to beating Transistor. I think the problem for me was I didn't really engage with the combat system the way I did with Bastion. I thought Bastion's was way more intuitive, and Transistor's, yes, I just couldn't really get my head around. But the time I did spend with Transistor, I really loved everything about the atmosphere and the art style. It was such a just an entrancing game on those aspects, but I just couldn't stick with it just on a, you know, bit by bit playing it basis. So I never actually finished it, but it's a really solid and very special and unique game for sure.
Yeah, the boss battles were started to get a little annoying.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Okay, cool. Let's move on to the next batch. I want to try and get through as many as we can. Somebody highlighted in our little notes section here for me. Thank you so much. All right,
your boy Kevin.
What
Thank
up?
You, Kevin. All right, so our next batch here is Nier Automata, Metroid Fusion, Shadow of the Colossus, Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild, and Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. There's a lot of big hitters on that one.
I'm gonna just jump on that right away. Breath of the Wild is amazing.
I never
really played a Zelda game like by myself. It was always with friends or like I was at a buddy's house or something. And I got my Switch and a buddy lent me Breath of the Wild and I didn't beat it because there was so much to do. But it was awesome. I mean, it's beautiful to look at. The music is great. The way it explains stuff in the beginning. So like, for instance, I never played a Zelda game like solo. So I didn't know a lot about Zelda. But like in the beginning of the game, like they're just like, here you go. Here's the situation. Here's what's going on. Here's a little bit of history. There you go. And it was fine. It was perfect. I was like, cool. Okay, I got this. And I just, the way I played it, I mean, it was cool to be able to do whatever you want. You know, being not having played any of them, it was kind of like I was wary of side quests because I was like, I just want to know what the actual hell is going on. But every side quest had like a little bit of lore. And I was like, oh, okay, that's what that is. Cool. Like, I just liked it.
I mean, the funny thing is, being someone who's played like nearly every Zelda game, that's the same thing I appreciated, the non-gameplay. Like, every Zelda is pretty much you can't do XYZ thing until you've done, you know, this stuff and this stuff. Like, this one, you don't really have to do anything. You can go straight to the final boss, and there's a chance you could defeat it. And normally with Legend of Zelda, they don't completely lay your quest out for you like they did in this one, because this one, it was right at the beginning. They're like, this is what happened, this is what you need to do, and then you could, if you wanted to, spend the rest of the game filling in the gaps.
I just don't think that game should be on this list though, because it's so lacking in actual story elements.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking,
because
too.
I mean, the whole thing is just like, okay, here's what you need to do, go. And then you just like, all the lore is basically just like, oh, the Guardians were rampaging 100 years ago. Shit. Like, that's really all. The world building, sure. Like, talking to the NPCs doing the side quests, absolutely. Like, it makes it feel much more rich and lively than any other Zelda game. But, man, the whole story is really just in, like, the photos you collect.
Not really. Let me debate that.
Oh, boy.
You get the, I'm coming in hot, so look out.
It's on.
Because when you get the memories back and you learn about the champions, I think that like there might not be so much lore that's like centered around Link specifically.
Right. Yeah.
But the world itself, like there are stories and there's lore around each of the champions that pilot the different guardians.
Mm-hmm.
There's like lore about the like Sheikah tribe, the Yiga tribe, the technology that was used. There's lore about like Princess
I think my problem with it, all the lore is very self-contained in the context of 100 years when these guardians were walking around on all of our buildings and lighting everything on fire. Like I just didn't feel like you got a lot of history and lore as like Hyrule and these nations, not nations, but these tribes more or less.
Well, I mean, Legend of Zelda normally goes on the It like repeats itself. So
yeah, that's the question I had is as somebody, so I'm with Kevin here. I've never played a Zelda game. Breath of the Wild was the first game I ever played. I agree that it's an incredible entry point for somebody who's new to it because Link has amnesia. And so you're just like, okay, cool. I also have amnesia. I don't know what happened before any of this. So I think it's an excellent entry point. But my question is, did previous Zelda games also focus on what Neil is saying with world building, or did they have like actual plots that you played through?
So I tried going back through Twilight Princess, and it's just like, we're going to ram the story down your throat and tell you about the world, and we're going to do it at our pace that we want. But then you go and play something like The Wind Waker, where it eases off of that. It's still very linear. They're still, you know, on their set path telling you what's up, but you can still explore. And then in the different islands you go to and people you interact with, you get the world building that way.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I tried playing Ocarina of Time again last night, and for the first time ever, like, I just ripped through the first dungeon, and it just brought me zero joy whatsoever because I'm just like, why can't I just go do what I want? Like, I don't care about the story right now because I already know the story, and that's a big problem in replaying these single-player story-driven games is that nothing new or exciting is ever going to happen, and it's going to be the same all the time, and it's on you to branch out and find these little things, which is obviously what we like to do here at Lore Party.
Yeah.
I don't know. That amazing game, I don't think it should be on this list. I think if any Zelda game deserves to be on this list, and I failed to mention this when you had asked, would be Majora's Mask because that game is centered around the world building and talking to the NPCs. You have to do that to get any enjoyment out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you skip that, it is a very confusing fucking game.
That game is dark, too. So good.
Yeah, what was the theory about it being like about the different stages of like death or something?
Grieving, the grieving process.
That was a good one. I don't know why I didn't make it on the list.
So speaking of Shadow of the Colossus, actually, Leo, you brought it up earlier. Somebody should sell me on it because I've never played it. And I don't know if I'm like that interested.
You
want to
go fight giant shit and have a crazy twist happen? This is the game for you.
I was going to say, like, Shadow of the Colossus is on my list of personal, like, again, I don't know that the game could really be improved in a lot of ways. I think that's my personal opinion.
I agree.
It's so good, and it achieves what it seeks to achieve perfectly. Like, it's it might not be your cup of tea, but it's perfectly brewed, you know?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's one of my favorite games.
That was a great analogy. Damn, Leo.
It's one of the most inventive.
I want a cup of coffee.
It's one of the most inventive and original and artful games ever made, I believe. Honestly, though, if you haven't played it yet, I question whether or not it's like worth it to go back and play it just because, like, it's kind of like, It had to be appreciated at the time it came out because it was so original and different from what was out there when it came out. I just remember it being unlike anything I'd played before then. It was the atmosphere was just spot on and unforgettable. And it's just so cool.
I think for the orchestration the actual fights and the sort of nature of the fights, I think those things will stand the test of time. So if anybody listening hasn't played Shadow of the Colossus, you can actually get through it pretty quickly. Like, it's not this huge sprawling game.
That's true.
I'll also warn you, if you don't know a lot about the game, there isn't a lot of plot initially. There's a lot that is happening that you are not told about until very late in the game. And it kind of survives as a great experience from this sort of like, I felt like I was in the midst of the best directed movie often, where I'm like being thrown about on these giant monsters that I'm trying to take down. And I've never felt more triumphant and cinematic as a player playing a game that I did playing that game, even with the graphics as they were, you know, not being the most breathtaking graphics in the world.
All right, I'm sold.
Not to undercut him, but it really makes you feel like you're in the Shadow of the Colossus.
Alrighty. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, guys, but we'll be right back and we'll keep making our way down this list. Hey guys, it's Abu again, and I wanted to take a minute to just tell you about our friends over at Toast. So Toast is a company that makes these custom, handcrafted, gorgeous covers for your smartphone or your tablet or even your gaming device. In celebration of our 100th episode, they sent me a custom-made Switch cover, and to top it off, they engraved the Lore Party logo on it. It's beautiful. You can check out the photos on our social media on Instagram and Twitter, but if you're interested, go to toastmade.com and see what they have to offer. Get yourself a new cover. All right, so our next batch here, again, Supergiant Games is going to come up again, but Pyre is on this list. I know for a fact that Caleb put it on the list because he has bugged me since day one of Lore Party to do a Pyre episode, but I've yet to beat it. We got Pyre. We got What Remains of Edith Finch, Dishonored 1 and Dishonored 2, and Metroid 2. Let's talk Dishonored, because that's one we haven't touched on.
So I played Dishonored 1. I played maybe a quarter of it. I just kind of lost interest. It felt very Bioshocky, and I just kind of like, I'm playing it, and I just was like, I'm not really in the mood for this right now. Like,
I have not played it, so can someone give me a brief summary? Brief?
Keyword. That's a real tough summary to give.
It's like a, think of a steampunk world, but instead of steam, everything's run on whale oil.
Okay.
And you're a guy who sneaks around really well, and you have a knife, and you were accused of doing something bad, but you didn't, and you escape from prison to clear your name by killing people.
Or not killing people. You can go through the entire game without killing.
Yeah, there's a morality.
That's a very good point. Yeah, there's like a pacifist run you can do. And that's honestly, I will say I really enjoyed both games, but honestly, the story isn't like the strong suit of either one. Right. It's a good story. It's there if you want it. But the real strength of those games is the gameplay options you have available to you. The world building is really good. I think the setting is really cool and original, but the point-to-point story isn't honestly that strong in either game.
It's a poor man's Bioshock.
A little bit.
Damn, I would actually sort of disagree. So I never played Dishonored 2, but Dishonored 1 I like really loved. And not, I agree with Connor that the gameplay is the selling point of Dishonored. Because the game mechanics, you're basically an assassin who has special powers from, I think, a guy named Corvus. I forget exactly, but
no, you are Corvus. The guy who gives you the powers is called the Outsider.
Gotcha. Right. So you have these special powers and you're an assassin and you're trying to clear your name by killing various people in the story. And that essentially is the basic skeleton plot. But the world building is what attracted me. Like, I was fascinated with this world that ran on whale oil, and like everything in the game was sort of structured around this weird society that, like Connor, you said, what isn't exactly like steampunk, but shared a lot of the same aspects of it. But yeah, I think it's a world that you either love or you hate, depending on the setting. But then the gameplay is what's going to keep you coming back to Dishonored. I agree that the story beats themselves are probably not original enough to warrant any sort of awards.
That's what I liked about them. They're just fun worlds to be in and play in. That's what it was for me.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's move on to the next batch then. I'm going to love this batch.
Here's my question about it. Do you want to include all three together in one, or would you rather separate them?
I think let's separate them, because I think there's some discussion to be had on their own merits.
Okay. No, that's just a boo bias. Mash them down.
All right. Let's make this batch a little bit bigger. So this next batch is Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3. I obviously wrote those. Observer, Her Story, Overwatch, Stardew Valley, and Undertale / Deltarune.
Okay, so I'm skipping Mass Effect completely. I'm going straight into the Stardew.
Which you were not a believer in for a long time. Let's not skip over that fact.
I was not a believer in Stardew until I had to travel. And I was like, screw it, I'll buy this game and play it on my Switch. And then I got hooked. I don't necessarily, this is going to sound, you might disagree, but I kind of feel the same way that everybody felt about Breath of the Wild for Stardew Valley.
I disagree. I'm biased. Abu and I did an episode, again, shameless plug. We did episodes on Stardew Valley. And the brilliance of it is how it actually has this crazy plot that you, I will concede again that you're not forced to engage with it necessarily, but it's there and it's so much more fleshed out than it needed to be for effectively a farming simulator.
Yeah.
Game.
But that's why I also really, really like this game. If I was going off of the same reasons that we were Breath of the Wild might not be on there, then I could be maybe Stardew Valley, but I think it's a fantastic game. I mean, there's so many different ways of playing this damn game. Farm with friends, you could farm by yourself, you could be completely antisocial and just have a banging ass cranberry farm with fish, or you could just make friends with all the townsfolk and just mine for resources and never do any actual farming. You're completely in control of your own destiny. And I also really appreciate the premise of quitting your dead-end desk job in corporate America, working for the man.
Speaks to my soul.
Right on.
Right. And then coming out here and making millions of dollars selling crops,
farming, the most lucrative of professions.
Abu, I keep putting those pictures of my girlfriend's farm and how much money she makes every freaking day. It's so nuts. Everybody can have their own farm. And I think there's the little small baked in pieces, the farm that we had together where we got the mega melon.
Right.
So random. There are just a lot of goodies in that game, and they appear when they should appear.
Yeah, there's not enough good things I could say about Stardew Valley. This entire 100th episode could have just been me gushing about Stardew Valley with Leo and Lawrence. But what I will say is I actually love that we keep coming back to this discussion over and over again of plot versus world building, because I think that's two very different approaches to storytelling, right? And video games will follow distinct paths, whether it's we want to invest in our world and that's how we, convince you to continue playing and become attached to this game and the people in it, or we're going to have this incredible story with writing and story beats from start to finish, something like Last of Us, that still does the world building, but the story itself could stand on its own without much of the expanded lore and world building. And I love that we keep coming back to this discussion / debate about whether a game deserves to be on this list or not, depending on which route it takes. Because I think both are very valid routes to go in telling a story. Because video games are so experiential, right? They're not a passive medium where, imagine watching a movie that was Breath of the Wild, where you didn't get to actually interact with it and play the game. You just sat there and watched Link.
I mean, isn't that a lot of mainstream action movies where you have character, big antagonist set up, and then you're just basically watching the character get the, and it's the quality of the writing and the scripts and the dramatic beats just don't matter at all.
Right. Right. But I think it makes up for the lack of experience in world building with the quality of the writing and dramatic beats and the tension. A movie like Die Hard is going to build attention with its action, maybe not its writing so much, but there's a forward momentum to the plot that something like Zelda or Stardew Valley doesn't necessarily have, you know? Like Stardew gives you a setup. It tells you, hey, you left your corporate gig, you got a farm, go farm in this small town. And then you build out the story from there and you choose which little tiny, tiny adventures and story beats to dig into and explore further as you build out your farm. So I think that's two different approaches to storytelling in games. And I really like that we keep coming back to that discussion. Like that's what we're all about here on Lore Party.
You know what I find really interesting about every game on this list, aside from Observer, and Her Story, I haven't played those, but all the other games on this list, including Stardew Valley, are all games that I've played on suggestions of friends or on like some sort, like for instance, Dunkey made a video on Undertale and I was like, that looks awesome. I'm going to go get that. And like, you know, same with Mass Effect and Stardew Valley and Overwatch, all of it was like friends of, or some other influencer being like, hey, you got to check this game out. Like I would have never played it on my own.
Right. Well, a lot of these are like indie titles too, that got big, right? Like Stardew Valley made by one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also just feel like a lot of these games have floated around our, between our group at different times,
right.
Somebody has suggested some of these.
So like, tell, you know, so well, Undertale. You, Kevin, you brought up under, yeah, I wanted to segue to Undertale because I need you guys to explain to me what Undertale is.
Undertale Please. Is basically this crazy acid trip that you'll have. And it's like, you're going underground and you're fighting monsters, but they're not really all that bad. And you're just trying to get home. But then you realize, oh shit, there's another monster that's been pulling the strings all along. I should take that guy out. And you basically like learn about the fact that not everything is so black and white, and don't judge a book by its cover.
What's like the setup?
So there's a lot of branching paths.
There's so much stuff
in
this
game. The whole idea is that it's an RPG that is constantly trying to subvert the expectations of the genre. So it's still like fight, run, equip weapons, and like inspect, basically. Like those are your options in a battle. And nothing you do really ever seems to go the way that you plan it. Everything is just weird and almost random, but in a very controlled, logical way where it always makes sense. So it's always enjoyable. Some of the fights, you're basically in this little box controlling this little heart thing, and it now becomes this platformer or this bullet hell that you have to avoid. Like, it's not actual turn-based RPG at its core.
Wow. I mean, it's also been on my wish list for a long time. I have just never pulled the trigger and played it.
Because it's not on sale yet.
No, it actually goes on sale quite a bit. I just, when it goes on sale, other things also go on sale, and then you know you got to pick and choose. What about? Let me breeze through these next couple. Observer, Her Story, Overwatch. I don't know if any of us.
Overwatch is terrible, and I dislike it a lot. I freaking hate Overwatch. I'm gonna say that. And you know what's bad about it? Like, in like a group text that I have with some friends, like we have one friend who is like a huge Overwatch fan, and he convinced us all to get it as a substitute for playing Destiny.
Yep, that was my friend.
You got bad friends.
Yeah, oh my god! And so like we all bought it because sale, and we played it, and I'm like, this game is fucking terrible. But people who have been playing Overwatch, I oh my god, I swear it's like, they drank the Kool-Aid and it just never left their system because they swear by it. They're like, this is the greatest game. It's so fun. Half the time, shit is just flying in your face at like 1,000 miles per hour. You don't know what the fuck to do. There's some dumb ass objective that pops up halfway in the middle of a match. You can't pick the same character all the time if someone else picks it. Like, what is this game is trash. And then they just they release a new character every now and then. And then it's just like, oh, here's some like lore dump. Screw Overwatch. And you could tell him I said it. Dang it.
I can't join you in hating Overwatch, but I can say that I've been ambivalent about it since it came out. Like, it's just never appealed to me. I've never had any interest in it. And I had friends who were like, dude, you should get Overwatch, play with us. I'm like, nah, I'm good, man.
It's like, I wish that was the hype that Titanfall had when it came out.
Yeah, yes. Seriously.
Yes. I mean, and like Overwatch has interesting stories. So like when Bruce and I did that episode about the Omnic crisis, and I actually did some research on Overwatch, like the story they put behind it is really good, and they could do something with that. But yeah, instead, it's really they good, just yeah. instead they have this trash multiplayer like battle royale nonsense.
Well, I will say that I don't hate Overwatch nearly as much as you do, clearly. I don't know that anyone could. But I will say that I agree that the lore is especially interesting. So Bruce and Caleb are, and I think Bavi also, are huge Overwatch fans here on the team. And
they're
gonna
hate me.
They've done a number of episodes on the lore. And just by like proxy of editing those episodes and listening to their discussions about it, like I've learned a lot about the lore that I had no idea existed. And I appreciate that Blizzard does that, you know, like companies could go the route of something like Apex Legends and just like release an arcade shooter and just not do anything with the story of it. Just be like, hey, here are some characters. They're in an arena, shoot each other. So I appreciate that Blizzard has gone that extra mile, and they have an expertise, right? They have a background in world building and storytelling. They created StarCraft. They created World of Warcraft. I mean, they have built these massive worlds that people have invested heavily in, and that they have expanded universes, books, comics, whatever.
Yeah.
Films. But, I mean, there's a World of Warcraft movie. And I appreciate they did that with Overwatch. Like, no matter how bad I am at the game and how little I enjoy the arcade shooter gameplay of it, I appreciate the story.
But let me just say this, and this is like non-ranty. When I compare it to something like Destiny, where it's kind of same thing, where not all of the lore is like upfront and in your face, but they still seem to sprinkle enough of it in there to keep you interested. I just think that I don't know, a large portion of the hype from Overwatch just comes from the like esports side.
Yeah, I have a hard time judging that, but I agree. I feel like the esports side dwarfs the people who love the lore.
Right.
Like, I think there are definitely big fans of the lore and eat up the lore dumps and the new characters and the comic books every time Blizzard releases them. But there's a much larger group of Overwatch people that couldn't give a shit about that and just
right.
like
and
play
think,
it.
And I think maybe that's the reason why the game isn't appealing to me. It's just because, like, I don't think that they... Personally, I don't think that they do enough for like the lore side as opposed to like the esports side. But then again, esports side probably makes them more money.
Definitely. Okay, so we're running low on time. I'm going to try and say very few things about Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3. Because
they're
we've
amazing.
Done so
That's
many episodes. Right. Me and Kevin and Leo have done a ton of Mass Effect episodes. And I would say it's one of the lore party games that we love here. And they're incredible. They're these amazing sci-fi operas. I tell this story time and time again, but Mass Effect 1 came out the same year that Halo 3 did. Halo 3 was massive. And I chose to get Mass Effect instead. And all of my friends got Halo 3. And I spent like a couple of months not playing Halo 3 with my friends because I wanted to play Mass Effect instead. It's been a hugely important game in my life. I love the story. I think BioWare was at their peak when they created Mass Effect 1 and 2 and even 3. Like, despite how it ended, like it ended in a very Game of Thrones-esque, like what the fuck just happened fashion. But everything leading up to that point was just amazing. Like everything I wanted from a sci-fi RPG video game.
For me, I had played Mass Effect 1, like a brief like hour of it at a buddy's house, or in my buddy's dorm actually, and never touched it. And then I had like when Mass Effect 3 was coming out, like I think 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, I probably said this in an episode, but basically my buddy showed me the trailer for Mass Effect 3. They showed me all the trailers for all the Mass Effects, and I said, okay, I'll play that. And I binged Mass Effect 1, Mass Effect 2, all DLCs except for like one of them. And then I got Mass Effect 3. And I finished Mass Effect 2 like an hour before I went and picked up Mass Effect 3. So I was in it to win it. Tell you, that whole entire story, like whatever about the ending, I chose the Beast Machines ending, whatever, the green one. But it was, the journey was so amazing.
So
like, it was like binging a TV show and like just getting super heavily into it.
I just picture a red-eyed Kevin.
Oh, I didn't go to class. Don't tell my parents, but I did not go to class.
Huddled in a corner in a dirty t-shirt playing.
Dude, the game does that
too. I bathed.
So yeah, to hear our more nuanced opinions about the game, please just listen to our episodes. That was just us gushing. The game, for all its greatness, does have its faults, and we dive into that into the episodes. Okay, let's do this next batch of games. We're running low on time, but that's no big deal. Let's try and get through as many as we can. I do want to point out, you can check out the full list of 100 on our website. Just go to loreparty.com. It's going to be on there. It's going to be a blog post. If you want to check out the full list of the 100 games that we recommend that everyone play.
And this list
we're definitely
is just
not going to make it through.
Everyone put in a little something. That's the whole rhyme and reason to it. So don't get upset if there's anything included that shouldn't be or excluded that you wanted.
Just... Right. Everyone on the team just made their contributions. So
here's the thing. If you see a game that we didn't talk about in this, hell, let us know and we'll make an episode on it.
Yeah. Tweet at us. All right. Let's do this next batch. This will be an interesting batch too. We got Banner Saga, Halo 1, 2, and 3, Bloodborne, Metro Last Light, and Kingdom Hearts. Should we just get Halo out of the way? Halo 1, 2,
Halo
3?
Is great. Halo 1 was good. Halo 2 was phenomenal. Halo 3, not too shabby.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I mean, if you've ever played a shooter, you've played Halo. I mean,
Halo, I will say, that was my replacement. GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64.
Ooh.
I started Halo with multiplayer, and so that was my big thing. Like, it was so fun. And then when I actually played the story in Halo 1, that story, I feel like, does not get enough credit, because, you know, you're on this unknown thing floating around in outer space fighting these aliens, and then all of a sudden you encounter the Flood. And that whole first scene with the Flood, where you're like, okay, what the hell are these new things? And then you realize they're just parasites that have taken over the bodies of your enemies and some of your friends.
Yeah, dude, terrifying. I remember being a young teenager and playing that Flood mission and just being scared shitless.
Yeah, the Flood are terrifying.
Because they just lunge at you?
Staying up, playing Halo 2 with my cousins at 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. and getting our shit rocked on Legendary, trying to beat it, but also being terrified of fighting the Flood the whole time.
I remember my older cousin was stuck on the library level in Halo 1, and I actually beat it for him. And that's when I knew I was a first-person shooter prodigy. the Halo series, I think, is just so strong as a leading voice in creating just a classic sci-fi event. But I think for me, I have more... I get more value out of the wider universe of it, the lore, the lore that all the books have established. There's a lot of really fun topics there that I really like getting into, and you can get into them with me when in my upcoming Halo episode. So keep an eye out for that.
Yes.
A little plug.
This 100th episode is just everyone plug your shit for an hour. Love it. No, but for sure, I'm really excited for Connor's upcoming Halo episodes. There's so much to dig into. I agree that I loved the Halo games, and I think they're iconic and important in the larger sort of video game canon and video game history, but I got so much more out of the books and out of the comics and out of the extended universe than I did from the core games, because the world is huge and the history is massive and the games follow Master Chief, and that's great, but he's not the most expressive of characters.
Oh dear God, did you just see the recent trailer when he's like, hey, we can finally go home, status report. Fuck,
right.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen
the books just flesh both his character out, but many of the other characters out so much more as well. So I got a lot out of reading the books.
Have ever watched the Halo anime stuff? Oh boy, is that good.
Yeah, the anime is good too. Let's wrap up, and I wanted to give every person a quick 30 seconds to a minute to shout out a game that's either on the list that we haven't gotten to. We only got it through about the first, 42 on the list, so there's quite a bit left over that we didn't touch on. Everyone's going to have 1 minute to shout out a game that we didn't get to on the list, or a game that never made it on our list that you think should have. Any volunteers who want to go first?
A game that I meant to put on the list but didn't get a chance to before it filled up. I really want to shout out to Spec Ops The Line.
Yes, dude. I was going to bring that up. You stole mine. Okay.
Sorry about that.
No, you're good.
But really kind of under the radar third-person shooter that came out a few years ago. And it just, honest, I'll boil it down to this. Like, I feel like playing that game gave me PTSD. Like, it just,
I know that's a horrible thing to say because I don't want to detract from real PTSD.
But what I mean though is, like, it's such an exploration of, like, you know, trauma that someone can, you know, come through in combat, and it sort of deconstructs tropes of, like, someone trying to be a hero and just making things worse. And some of the things that happen to the characters, you feel them happen to you, and you watch the characters, like, just unravel as human beings. They lose their grip on themselves. They lose their sanity. Mm-hmm. They kind of spiral, and you watch it happen, not just in cutscenes, but, like, in the gameplay.
Right. The gameplay mechanics, like, feed into that theme.
Yeah. Like, a main character will like, finish off an enemy in melee combat early in the game by doing something kind of quick and, you know, quick and efficient, like a stamp on the throat. But later, he'll just beat him to death with his bare hands, and it's like you just see him just getting closer and closer to the edge of madness, and it's insane. It's just such a
I love that you brought up that example. Like, the game is just full of tiny subtleties like that,
yeah,
that you may or may not necessarily notice as your main character sort of descends into darkness and starts to lose his mind because war is brutal and murder is bad. He starts to do things that are much more chaotic, and like, the executions are a great example. Like, the executions at the end of the game are brutal.
Yeah, ruthless. Like, shoot a guy in the knee and then the head so that he dies screaming instead of just shooting him in the head in the first place. It's just so crazy.
Honestly, like, I'm not a big shooter fan, but that game to me is the best shooter I've ever played because the story is incredible, and it explores something that I think a lot of shooters sort of pass over. And it's the idea of, like, war is bad, right? Like, we're all playing like Call of Duty and even Halo to some extent. And we're just justifying it as, like, oh, those are the bad guys. Those are aliens. It's fine for us to just endlessly slaughter, you know, NPCs or bad guys that come across our screen. But, like, Spec Ops is the only shooter I've played that makes you question that and makes you realize that, like, it's kind of fucked up that you, like, your version of entertainment, our version of entertainment, is shooting virtual things that may or may not look like people.
Yeah,
incredible recommendation.
Thank you.
Lawrence, what about you? We went way over a minute, so clearly not following that rule.
Sorry.
That's totally fine.
I'm going to take my 30 minutes. I think there were two games that I've been, like, kind of mowing over, but I think the game that I want to talk about is probably Jedi Knights Academy. Damn, I loved
it. Yes, thank you.
I loved that game. Honestly, it was one of my favorite Star Wars games I've ever played, where you're a Jedi and you can do things and, like, kind of go down the path of the dark side. And I think my favorite part is just the decision in the game. Like, you can choose to kill your friend who went to the dark side when he's asking for help, and then you yourself, like, fall to the dark side, or you can resist and actually help this person. And the cool thing is, if you choose to go to the dark side, you literally have to fight every, like, dark force user and all of your friends in the academy. And it, like, the game would culminate with you, Lord, and then having to battle against your own master.
Wow.
Like, it's such a good game.
Yeah. I had that game and I never finished it. So,
oh my
maybe
god!
I should go back and play it.
If the Steam controllers or, you know, the Steam controls were a little bit better, like, I have it on Steam, I would just keep playing it. But, like, the controls are so clunky now.
Yeah.
It's, like, not as enjoyable. But God, having it on the console, great.
Yeah, that game's a classic.
Kevin, what about you?
I've been debating on three games right now. I'll name them, but I think I know the one I'll choose.
All right.
I've been debating on StarCraft, which obviously we will be having an episode on soon.
Yes.
Spoiler alert for Lore Party. And Destiny. Although the reason why I put Destiny in my head was just because it's probably the game that I've played some of the most ever in my life of, but I'm not crazy about the storytelling methods. But I would probably have to say Assassin's Creed 2, just because hands down, that is my favorite Assassin's Creed game. It's the longest. It's got so much shit in it, and I love it. It's not, and it's
to
like
our boy Ezio.
It's not like I feel overwhelmed playing that. Like when I play Skyrim, I feel overwhelmed. There's like so much stuff to do, and I'm like, oh god, it's like, you know, having too many projects at home that you got to work on, and you're like overwhelmed. That's kind of how I feel when I play a game like so big like that. But like Assassin's Creed is just Assassin's Creed 2 is just so rich in character development and just storytelling. Like it doesn't feel linear. It doesn't feel like I'm stuck. Like I still have freedom to do stuff. And it's just, I like exploration, and it still embraces the exploration. Like the game itself is like, it's not like one of those games where it's like, we made this massive map, but you're only going to be able to hang out in like this little section. Like the game wants you to explore. It wants you to experience not just the story, but the time frame. Like it wants you to experience
that's what I was gonna everything say. If you have any interest in history or in Renaissance Italy,
like, you would love
play the Assassin's Creed games, right? Like the Codex itself in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Like historical facts on monuments and real life historical characters. And many of the people you interact with throughout the series are real life historical people.
Yeah.
Like history buffs, Assassin's Creed is the game for you.
My wife is not a huge gamer, but like she has a degree in history, archival studies and stuff. And she just watches me play Assassin's Creed sometimes just because she thinks it's really cool to like see that. And that's something that I think everybody can appreciate. Just like it's fairly relatable because it's actually, aside from the Assassins and Templar part, it's our own history. You know what I mean?
For sure. Neil, what about you?
So I think just because I had kind of jumped down the throat of saying like Breath of the Wild shouldn't be on this list, I think the one Zelda game that definitely should be is The Wind Waker. Because I found, so when Breath of the Wild was coming out, everyone was just glued to their monitors during that E3 because we didn't care about what the story could possibly be. Sure, there was a bunch of speculation, this and that, but like we're genuinely like, okay, you have this open sandbox, what can you do with it? And everyone was constantly blown away with the possibilities. So going back, and I've been really trying like to play a Zelda game post Breath of the Wild, it is tough because, as I stated earlier, I want to go to that thing. I want to go do what I want when I want. And the only thing really like that's like a big console Zelda that's scratching that itch is the Wind Waker. It's the one game where I can turn it on and be like, okay, I care about these characters. I care about the story. And imagine, you know, it's December 2002 and this is the follow-up to Ocarina of Time. Still on the list of hands down the best game ever made across the board for a lot of people. So now you just have something that has to completely try to blow that out of the water. So they put it underwater. This is 100 years after in the timeline where, you know, Link left because he went to go do Majora's Mask. So we're in this branch. Hyrule, as we know it, you know, as we find out later, is underwater. There's some Gorons floating out on this great sea here and there. What happened to the Zora people? Like, did they become the Rito? Is this a whole new thing? And it's just constantly in the back of your mind, like, okay, Ganondorf from this old world is back as well. Like, he's looming over all this. Like, it's just a lot of the past trying to catch up with you and you wondering what the implications of all of these changes are while holding in the world building from Majora's Mask, where you go and talk to these NPCs, you go to these remote areas, and it all just slowly adds itself up to get adds the pieces and parts together. It's nice. The one Zelda game I think anyone can go back to and not have any gripes with it outside of, I mean, it still is a very linear game, but it's close to perfect for me.
Plus, the name of your boat and the final scene are my two favorite things about that game. King of Red Lions.
Oh, yeah.
And just like the wish to give them a future. That was like fucking dope. I beat that game like 12 times. It was ridiculous.
Leo, what about you? What's your game?
So I would recommend everybody check out the full list because there are a lot of games that deserve to be mentioned and deserve to be celebrated. And we made a long list and it's really cool. I'm going to quickly shout out BioShock. We have episodes that we really dive into some of the BioShock like specific games. And those were breathtaking and incredible and life-changing for me. But I'm going to highlight one that we may never do on the show just because I think it deserves a shout out. And that's the game Journey. So there's the indie game Journey. It was a 3 or 4 download. It was like $20. And for similar reasons to why I love Shadow of the Colossus, Journey accomplished everything that it sought out to accomplish perfectly. Like there's no aspect of the game that I feel any dissatisfaction with. And while the story and the plot and the world building is subtle and simple and straightforward, it's perfectly executed because you're not like, at no point do you wonder what you're supposed to be doing and not guiding you. They're just guiding you silently from the sort of wings, right? The other thing
in the art direction, such a beautiful game.
I mean, it won a bunch of awards, rightfully so, for its music and its art. Like every moment looked like a painting. So for my money, just because again, it's a simple story. It's one that is accomplished very carefully and very deliberately, and I think it's pretty
nice. I would wrap up with my one game. I was deciding between a few of them as well. And again, these are on the rest of the list, so please check out the rest of the list. I wish we had time to get to some of these. I was going to say Dragon Age, but I think we've already sort of touched on BioWare and their Golden Age, and I would say Mass Effect and Dragon Age Origins was the Golden Age of BioWare, and both of them are... I love both of them for very similar reasons, and I play them around the same time. The one game I will shout out that we didn't get to, and we were about to get to it, it was going to be our next batch, is Night in the Woods, because I recently played it upon recommendation from Neil and many of the other Lore Party team members here, and wow, the game just like struck me on so many levels. The main character, the game dealing with themes of like mental health, and honestly, these like very millennial issues of trying to figure out what to do with your life, and especially moving back in with your parents. Like these are all things that I think as a young person right out of college, which, you know, I still consider myself to be, although I'm starting to grow old. I think I identified a lot with May. I identified a lot with that small town life that was represented in the game. The writing is incredible. I think that's also another small indie game that was developed by a very, very small team that got big, rightfully so. And it just, playing the game brought up these emotions that I honestly haven't felt since I was a teenager. And it just, I don't know, there was so much to identify with in the game. I thought the characters were beautifully written. I thought some of the story beats were incredibly emotional. And if you are somebody who grew up in a small town and eventually found yourself moving out of that small town for one reason or another, Night in the Woods can be boiled down to a group of friends who grew up in a small town together and is still stuck there and is just trying to get out. And I think that's something, if you are someone who left a small town at some point in your life, that you can identify so strongly with. So that would be the one game that I would shout out. Night in the Woods, pick it up, play it. So this has been a blast. Thank you guys so much for 100 episodes. I hope you guys are all proud of the work we've put in over the past year. 100 episodes is no small feat, and it's clear from our discussion over the past like hour and a half here that we all definitely love geeking out about this shit.
That's
and that
true.
Some of us have very strong opinions about Overwatch. That's like the key takeaway that I'm getting from the past hour is never mention the word Overwatch around Lawrence ever again.
No, I'll go to an 11.
So for the 100th time, that about wraps it up for this episode. We hope you enjoyed listening, and if you did, as always, be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, which really helps us grow the show. And as always, you can find Lore Party on Instagram and Twitter at lore_party. Thank you so much for 100 episodes, guys. Thank you so much for supporting us this far. We've had a blast creating the show, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to it. Here's to 100 more.